Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening, everybody? It is I, the one and only, the producer, the writer, the actor, the broadcaster, the undisputed king of DC media, William Powell. Welcome, everybody. This evening, I've got Mr. Corey Williams on the phone, and he has a fantastic movie coming out pretty soon. It's a documentary. It's The DMV Truth, Indie Film Artists, and it's a really hot documentary coming up. And let me bring in Mr. Corey Williams right quick. Let's see what's going on. Hey, Corey, is that you?
Yes, it is.
Hey, man, what's going on?
Doing good.
That's good, man. That's good. Fantastic. So tell me, man, why should folks go out there and see this documentary?
Because it's going to touch so many people. I think for people that are maybe in middle school or high school who have curiosity about doing independent films, it's going to talk to them about what they have to do to prepare for it, the struggles and triumphs that they can accomplish learning about independent films. I think for people that are currently doing independent films, whether it's in front of the camera or behind the camera, they're going to relate to these 20 people that are talking. Each one of them has a different story, which makes it unique. It's original. And I think even for people that don't have an interest in independent films, they're going to gravitate towards these 20 people because the struggles, the triumphs, the challenges, the goals that they have set for themselves is what all of us go through on a daily basis, no matter what profession we're in.
So it's kind of helping them, like, this face adversity. I mean, like you say, everything, all professions have a certain amount of adversity.
Correct. Correct. And I think with doing the independent film scene, talking about that and hearing from these different folks, a lot of people are going to come away very, very encouraged. Some of the stories are upbeat. Some of them are a little bit of a tearjerker. Some of them will be making you laugh. And I think for the folks in the DMV area, they're going to feel very proud of these 20 people that are talking. I think they're going to feel that they're well represented by these folks.
And to hear you talk, it sounds like it's the type of documentary that follows, I guess, a storyline, has a beginning, middle, and end for each subject. Is that the way you shot it?
Yeah, what I did was I actually broke it up depending on what the person did in independent film. So we kind of start off by talking to the filmmakers and their first projects and the struggles they went through, how they got it done, their support system. Then we transition over to the actors and what got them interested in getting involved in film, who encouraged them, what was the hardest character that they've had to play, what roles would they still want to play. And then we go to talk to people that do post-production work, sound work, and how what they do is kind of gets lost sometimes in the shuffle, but how important it is to set the tone for a film. Once we do that, we kind of go back through all the folks and we touch on stereotypes. We talk about diversity. The females who are taking part in this documentary, they talk about some of the prejudice they've been through being filmmakers and being female and the challenges they've had to overcome. And then all of them really touch on how in the DMV area that – the talent that you have here in the DMV area is the same talent you have in New York, the same talent you have in Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Texas, Atlanta. And, we want to definitely put the DMV on the map when it comes to doing independent films.
That sounds like that was really your inspiration, wasn't it, to really put DMV artists out there and put them on the map?
Absolutely. I have not seen a documentary that did that for the DMV area as far as independent films. And the way that the 20 artists talk, when you watch it, you're going to kind of feel like they're talking directly to you. It's very personable, you know, and I did that on purpose. And there's a little bit of a chip on their shoulder as well. And this whole documentary really came by for me back in 2009. I got into many what I call very passionate debates, heated arguments with people that did independent films in New York and Los Angeles and Atlanta.
Okay.
And I would hear, it was kind of a slap in the face of the DMV area. Well, you guys don't have the talent. And if you do have actors, you don't have people behind the camera, or you don't have the people in the DMV area don't have the stamina to actually start a film and finish it. And that just burned me up. So, you know, we agreed to disagree, but I told a couple of them, I said, you know what, give me some time and I'm going to answer your question. And these 20 people, really, I owe them a lot because they helped me answer this question. It was a challenge. I felt like that was not just for me personally, but for all of us. And I felt like, you know what, you know, we've been bullied around a little bit in the past, but now it's time for us to step up.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. So how did you get your 20 subjects together? How did you choose them?
You know, that was the most difficult part. The first thing I decided was with the 20 people, I wanted to mix it up. So I wanted to make sure that I had, as far as behind the scenes, I wanted a few writers, producers, and directors. And then I wanted to concentrate on who they were. So I wanted to make sure I had male and female, that I had young and old, that I had black, white, Hispanic, Asian. I wanted to make sure that this group was very diverse. I did the same thing with the actors and the same thing with, again, people that did stuff behind the scenes, you know, as far as stunt coordinating and post-production work. So once I kind of knew the artists I was looking for as far as what they did, then it was time for me to actually find the people. And what I started to do was I did a lot of research. I talked to people that I knew, some people that I come in contact with when I would visit film sets through the years. I kind of made a lot of jotted down a lot of notes for the past 2.5 years.
Mm.
So I did my research for quite a while. And once I was able to come up with that, I realized something very early on, that if I was going to get this documentary done and it be done orderly and very well organized, that whatever dates I picked, I had to stick to them. Because I do realize that in an independent film scene, that whether you're in front of the camera or behind the camera, you know, you're filming. And
right.
Everybody's availability is not the same. So I knew that, okay, let me set some concrete dates. And if these people were available, then they could be part of the documentary. And there were probably, I would say, 15 I had on my wish list that couldn't do it because of, prior engagements, you know, as far as
right.
Putting the film. Obviously, I didn't want to interrupt that. And there were probably, I would say, about 4 to 5 that initially said yes, and then prior to doing the filming, they whether it was an actor and with, you know, doing the audition, they got a role, or an investor came to one of the filmmakers and said, hey, I need someone to do this film. Obviously, I didn't want to stand in the way of that person doing that project.
Right,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, so then I had to fill that. And but it wasn't that hard. I had a very, very long list as far as people in the DMV area. The last thing that was really important to me, and it I think it's the obvious, is making sure that these 20 people, that it was a good mixture of people that were from the D.C. area, you know, Maryland area and Virginia area. I felt like if I was able to really, divide that and you know, very evenly, that it would work out fine. And I was very satisfied when filming the documentary, and then obviously after getting it finished, the post-production, watching it, viewing it, I've been smiling from ear to ear.
Did any of the subjects really stand out or have a compelling story to tell?
Yeah, you know what? They all did. The ones that stick out to me and that really rang to me, I would say Nia Malika Dixon. She's a filmmaker in the from the Baltimore area. And,
okay.
What really stood out to me was that she's Muslim, and she was talking about how in the independent film scene, how one of the, I guess, reasons she got involved in it because she didn't see any stories that really represented her. And she was kind of tired of seeing the, you know, the standard Hollywood type films. And she felt that if she was going to make a change, she had to take action. And the doing her segment, what really put a smile on my face is she had actually went back to her old high school 20 years later. And it's an all-girls school. And she was able to show one of her independent films. And she said that one of and she told me that after that, when she was doing the Q&A session, that one of the girls kind of broke down a little bit and was thanking her because she felt like, with her being Muslim as well, that that was the first time she was able to watch a film that represented who she was. She could relate to it. And I just thought that was powerful, how she was touching these young girls' lives. And not only could they watch her film, they could physically talk to Nia. And then knowing that she's from, went to that same school 20 years prior, That meant a lot. So that was probably the first one that sticks out. Another one that stuck out to me was Kevin Hill.
Okay.
And his story really rung out to me. He's a supervising sound editor who actually has his own studio. And he talked about that many years ago. He had worked for a company and, you know, they had some layoffs. And so he finds himself, he's married, he doesn't have a job, he has his first child is about to be born pretty soon, and so he's at this crossroads of, do I just want to go and get a job doing sound work for a company, or do I really want to follow my dream and start my own company? And he did the wise thing by, first of all, talking to his wife, and making sure that, you know, she was part of the decision, so he's a smart man for doing that. And he was able to do it. He with the support of his wife, he was able to build his company from the ground up, and he rented some space, and then he actually then got a bigger studio, actually visited that studio out in Catonsville probably about 7 months ago, and I was just impressed with all the equipment he has. And the Dolby approved sound, which is very rare to have, you know, in around these parts. Usually you got to go out to, you know, Hollywood and New York, but to have someone that's able to do it in the local area is just great. And he's like, to me, it was like the American dream. You know, he had a passion way back in college, and his wife was a big supporter of him, and he worked his way. He struggled at times. But now all the hard work that he's put in has paid off. And I really think for kids that are in high school and college and that are getting ready to enter into the real world, that they're going to be able to look up to Kevin and see what he's done and inspire to be like him.
Were there any really funny parts?
Oh man, there was so many. It's unreal. A couple that stick out to me, Dan Shepling, who is from Baltimore, Maryland, he actually composes music for independent films, and he was telling the story about when he was in high school, and he was just itching to, you know, compose music for anybody or somebody, and he said a gentleman that came to his high school and talked about independent films, so he had stopped the guy and said, hey, look, you know, I want to score your film, and the gentleman had told him, well, you know, I haven't really started filming yet, I'm in pre-production. He said, well, just send me anything. So the gentleman sent him a synopsis, and it was like three paragraphs of different scenes. And he went ahead off of what he read. He was able to visualize it and compose the music, and he sent it to the guy. And he said, you know, he never heard from the guy. He was like, hey, I don't know if this guy ever finished his film. I really, really don't even know what the title of the film was or really what it was all about. It was very vague. And he said, you know, for all I know, I might have scored a porno for my first, you know, first time doing, you know, scoring for some type of film. So that story was pretty funny. Another one was with Eric Christopher Myers and his wife, Laura Myers. They're interviewed together as a couple.
Yeah.
He's a filmmaker. She's a producer that works with him. She also does costume design. And they were talking about when they did their independent film Roulette, how they had just got off their honeymoon, and they didn't even unpack their boxes, and they're filming in the house and how their house could never get clean. And that when they ended up moving to another house, the moving was so much easier because there were so many boxes that they had never unpacked. And just hearing the two of them go back and forth, finishing each other's sentences, it was hilarious. I was just, they had me rolling over laughing.
Yeah, Eric's a very good filmmaker. He's actually been on the show before, and Roulette is an outstanding film.
Yes, it is. It's an outstanding film, and you know, Kevin Hill actually did the sound work on that film. So there's a few connections with the 20 people that are involved in here. Since we're talking about the DMV area, and it's, you know, it's a small world in the independent film
community. Small world.
Yeah, some of these folks have worked together or know of other people that have worked with them. So it was great to have some connections with these folks.
Hmm. So how long was your period of principal photography?
The principal photography really wasn't that long. We were able to knock it out in 3 weeks.
Hmm.
Yeah, we I was able to put a very tight time frame on everything. My wife, Chantel, who was one of the producers, and Kenny Johnson, who was also a producer and editor, we had sat down and we really hashed out a plan to get the film done. And probably I would say the fourth person who was a big, major part of this documentary was photographer Roy Cox in his studio. I knew that if I wanted to promote this this documentary and for people to wonder why they should see it, that I needed to have some visuals. So I went to him and told him about my idea, and I told him, I said, you know, I want all these artists photographed and, you know, and catch them in their element, you know, their expressions. And when I came to his studio, I was impressed at how big it was. And so I talked to him, and I said, you know, to do, you know, the interviews, why don't we use this place? Kill two birds with one stone. And,
right.
It just worked out for us. It worked out. It was his studio is off Eastern Avenue. It was a good middle ground for the people that lived in you know, the Baltimore, D.C., Virginia area. It was easy to find. And one probably the biggest thing that everybody kept saying when he walked in was two things: wow, he has a lot of parking. And number two, the studio was huge. It was pretty big. You know, and he just did a great job of really capturing the filmmakers, their expressions. And then I think filming it there, it just had a very home-type atmosphere. Because sometimes, especially for the filmmakers I found, which I wasn't surprised, some of them were nervous in the interviews at first because they're not used to being in front of the camera. They're used to being behind the camera. And then I even had a few actors that were kind of nervous at first, and I come to realize it for one reason. I'm sitting there, and I'm like, okay, I understand why they're nervous. They're in front of the camera all the time. But, you know, the difference here is normally when they're behind the camera, they're in character. They're portraying someone. This is where they're themselves. They're telling us the truth about everything they've been through. It's a confessional, so to speak. So I understood that they had a little nervousness, but I will tell you, once they started rolling, oh, they just kept going. I mean, they through a lot of them through their interviews, stories would pop into their mind. You would literally see it across their face. They would get a flashback of being on the film set or working with another actor or their worst experience doing a film or their best experience. So it was great to kind of go down memory lane with these artists.
Discuss, if you will, how you raised money for it.
That was easy.
Okay.
That was totally me.
Okay.
And again, it goes back to starting back in 2009. I knew this was something I wanted to do, and I'm pretty smart, just like Kevin Hill. You know, I talked to my wife first. And you know, she was the first one I told her about the idea. And for me, I always wanted to be original in anything I do. And again, no one has ever done a documentary like this before, and done it in the style that I've done it in. And I talked to her about it, and she said, "Well, yeah, you know, this will give a chance for you to kind of put to bed some of the rumors and what some of the people outside of the DMV area think about us here in the independent film industry, and you need to start doing your research." So I was kind of doing two things at the same time. I was doing my research on what I needed in the documentary, who I should target, and then saving the money and, you know, making sure I was able to finance it. One of the reasons why I wanted to make sure I was able to finance it was because I wanted to have total control over it. You know, when you do independent films behind the scenes, you partner with a lot of people, and you have to do a lot of give and take and a lot of compromising. This documentary was very personal to me. It was like my baby, and I was very protective of it, and I wanted to make sure that it was done in the right way. That's why I wanted to take my time with it. And I didn't want to compromise. I wanted this documentary to be done the way that I envisioned back in 2009.
Yeah, sometimes you don't want people messing with your vision, you know?
Yes. That was my biggest thing. I had to make sure it was done the way that I envisioned it, and because any other way, any other compromise, I couldn't have done it. This documentary meant that much to me. It had to be done this way.
Will there be sequels?
Yes. As long as Roy Cox, from a photography standpoint, and the producers, my wife Chantel Williams and Kenny Johnson, as long as they are willing to do it, if the three of them are in, I'm definitely going to do a sequel. And I've kind of talked to all three of them, and they've all said absolutely, because I had so much fun. And working with the three of them, I couldn't have done it without those guys. Those were my circumstances. I'll do it if these guys can be involved again. They all said yes. The only difference I will say with the sequel, I don't want to do 20. I want to kind of bring it down to maybe more like 16 or maybe even 14.
Okay.
But I do some of the people that I initially had on my list that couldn't do it, you know, due to scheduling conflicts, I'm going to definitely reach out to these people way in advance. And when I say way in advance, I'm talking way, way in advance.
Right.
So their schedules can line up. And again, what's going to make the sequel different from this original is that the people, because everybody's story is different. How they got to where they're currently at, their journey is completely different. Nobody has the same journey. So that's what's going to make it unique. So I'm looking forward to doing a sequel for the DMV Truth. And another avenue that I want to go with the DMV Truth, I'm a big fan of comedy. I'm not a comedian by any means, but I love comedy. I love to laugh. And I did an independent film called Can't Complain, a romantic comedy, back in 2009, and I had this comedian. Her name is Ayanna Dookie. I especially wrote a part for her in the film because she was just that funny and that engaging. And I contacted her about what I was doing with this documentary, and I told her, I said, you know, I would love to do the same exact thing but with comedians that, you know, are from the DMV area. You know, either they were born and raised or they work out here. And comedians, they go through their struggles and their triumphs just like actors and filmmakers do. And I have never seen a documentary on comedians from the DMV area. The documentaries I've seen are on, you know, comedians that are well-known and famous or have passed on, but not the those comedians that, you know, they had their day jobs and then they're doing these shows at night, and instead of going on vacation, they're flying across country. They're sacrificing having a family life and, you know, that normalcy, like a lot of our actors and filmmakers do. And so I told her about the whole idea, and she's going to produce that the DMV Truth dealing with comedians after we get done doing the sequel to the Indie Film Artist. So that'll be the third one that I'll do. And I think the good thing about that documentary is obviously these comedians are going to have people laughing. So. it'll be a documentary and a comedy show all in one.
That's a winning combination. Okay, yeah. Corey, well, we're coming up to the end of the show. We got about 3.5 minutes, so quickly tell the listeners where it'll be playing and how they can get tickets, and if we have enough time, just slip in there a little bit about Golden Tiger Productions.
Sure. The documentary, the DMV Truth Indie Film Artist, will be premiering at the Landmark Theater in Baltimore, Maryland on Thursday, October 25th at 7:30 p.m. It'll be shown at Auditorium Number 5. And the address there is 645 South President Street in Baltimore, Maryland. The theater holds 200 seats, so it's a pretty big theater. As far as the tickets, we're sold out, actually.
The That's
only
good.
Tickets I have in front of it is good. I'm very happy. The only tickets I have in front of me now are the tickets for me and my wife. the rest of them are gone. So I was glad to get the show sold out. I think it's a very unique area to have it at. We're going to have a Q&A session after the documentary with the 20 people that were in the film, so the audience will get a chance to ask them some questions. And then we have an after party a couple of blocks down at a restaurant called The Townhouse, a huge establishment for those who come to the premiere. No cover charge, food's already paid for, and place is actually open till 2 in the morning, so people get a chance to relax and meet the independent film artists face-to-face and have a good time. With Golden Tiger Productions, my production company, I started back in 2007, and the goal I had was to do produce independent films and try to make sure that I employed actors and film crews that were from the area. And I started off doing short films, obviously to kind of hone my craft and visiting a lot of film sets, but my first success really was producing a film called Torn. We started it back in 2007 about a gentleman who's a playboy, very successful from a business standpoint, and he contracts HIV. And instead of learning and getting himself educated, he keeps living the lifestyle he does. And when he sleeps with all these different women, what happens at the end of the movie is his aggressiveness and his lifestyle actually comes back to harm people in his family. And the film really shows you how it's a very small world out there. And, you know, from a educational standpoint, I think especially for the young folks, it's very powerful. It touches on HIV awareness and how people live out there.
We're going to have to wrap up. We're getting very near to the end of the show, man. I'm definitely going to have you on again.
Sure. Great.
And the next time, man, we'll give you more time to talk about Golden Tiger Production. I know you've produced like 13 films, man. That's outstanding.
Thank you.
Well, man, well, thanks for joining me tonight. You've been a really good guest. I'm really excited about it, man. I just encourage all my listeners to go out there and watch the documentary, man. It sounds like it's going to be a really good time.
Great. Hey, thanks for having me.
Okay, man. We'll have you on again.
Okay. Take care.
Have a fantastic night, brother.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. And I want to encourage all of my listeners out there to do something for their career every day and break a leg. Good night.